Facebook.
Africans at home and throughout the diaspora. Unity is strength. We got the power.
Stop the fussing and the fighting. Now the time to do the right thing.
We need more unity.
Come.
Stop the fussing and the fighting. Now the time to do the right thing.
In the spirit of Umoja, embrace with love.
Let's do it right now. We've got to do it right. Stop the fussing and the
right
fighting.
Now, right now.
Now we're down to do the right, right thing.
Yes, this is Jamala Rogers, your host on Voices from the Battlefield, and we are still having technical difficulties, although they are very different from the ones we had last week. So those of you who were tuned in, you know that we were trying to do it with Frederico Lobe, who's in Missouri prisons, and they decided they wanted to have a lockdown, so he's in his cell with a tablet, and so the audio wasn't that great, y'all, but you know, we managed to fix it up a bit. So check the website, JamalaRogers.com, to get that, and also YouTube at Jamala Rogers Station. So we were able to do a little bit better with the audio. But we are here, Voices from the Battlefield, because there is many battlefields, and we bring people on the show that on those battlefields, and they are fighting for democracy, they're fighting for artistic freedom, they are fighting for health care. And so we always want to see how these issues connect, and we also want to see how people other places, and even here in St. Louis, how they are mounting those battles, because maybe we could learn something from them. Because I believe, as the old saying goes, nothing is new under the sun. And we are lucky to have with us today one of the local artists in St. Louis, and that is Solomon Thurman. And Solomon is an educator, he's an artist, he is the owner and creator of the 10th Street Gallery, which is located downtown. He's been honored many different ways, including Lifetime Achievement by the Arts and Education Council. So if you don't know about this brother, I am glad to be able to present him to you. Welcome to the show, Solomon.
Oh, Jamila, I'm happy to be here.
Yeah.
Delighted.
Yeah. So, you know, we talked a lot about when I was trying to confirm you about the mural. And I know
yes.
that even before the mural, and I'm talking about the Black Americans in Flight mural, but I really do want to talk a little bit about what you've done and your approach to art, and how important you think art is to the life of a society. So talk about that for a minute.
I think art is important because what it does is it stimulates your creativity and allows you to focus on yourself and your self-development. If you're not focused on something creative, then you'll be distracted by other people's lives and industries instead of yourself, and therefore you won't be able to develop yourself as a human being. You have to be introspective.
That's a good way to put it, because I think when I hear you say that, it's not that each of us can be an artist, say like you, but there's creative juices inside of us that need to be activated, right?
Yes, very much so. They have to be stimulated. And by stimulating it, whether it's through music or writing or visual art or whatever medium you decide to use as a creative medium, it's only going to help you and help you as a life form throughout your life. And again, you know, you'll be able to do self-development. That's important.
And you've been doing this work for over 40 years. And so this is your life in many ways.
Yes.
You know, when you do that, or when you make that kind of commitment, your life really takes on a trajectory of its own. And I know you have inspired many people around you with the artistic expression, including your son, Lance Omar Thurman, who is a phenomenal photographer. I don't know if he does visual artists, but I remember reading something about you used to put sketch pads in front of them, and but I didn't know if that developed their artistic piece there, but he certainly has an eye, a beautiful eye for objects and in his photography. So yeah.
I thought it was important that he learns elements and principles of design and how to organize imagery and be able to put a name to it. And by doing that, it's developed his photography. He and I had gone through, I sent him through a class that I used to teach about design principles and surface design principles. And he went with me and did the entire thing and developed it to a point where he's able to see immediately how to organize imagery. And
I
again, I
can
think it's
see that. I can see that Solomon in the way that he approaches photography, because I don't know that unless that's some kind of innate skill that you develop, but I watched him, somebody commissioned him to do a photograph of me for my 70th birthday, and it's been some years ago. So, but where he put me and how he put me, I know that there was some thought to that. And so I could see where that kind of technical education would come in handy, even in photography.
Right, and it's spontaneous. As I told him before, when you're in the real world, we're bombarded with imagery all around you, and you can focus in on a particular area in order to look at a pleasing composition if you know how to recognize it. And that's all that is being able to recognize it and be able to put a name to it. As far as photography and artistry, my father was a photographer back in the 40s, and he also was a musician who played in local bands and local areas. And he was a phenomenal by ear harmonica player who could play
Oh,
anything that he
wow.
ever heard. And it used to fascinate me. He used to do it at home. We'd be in the kitchen, and he'd just be playing away, and I'm 7, 8 years old, fascinated by his ability to do that. When I was 8, he enrolled me into the People's Art Center as a little kid because he thought I shouldn't be drawing on the kitchen walls. So he said I needed training, and he sent me to the People's Art Center on Grandale Square, and I used to go there on Saturdays. And one of the things that I learned from that experience was that there were other artists like me, little 8 and 9 year old kids who were actually doing the exact same thing in the neighborhood. And we were all together at the People's Art Center. And that was, I didn't realize it at the time, but as I've gotten older and became a teenager into adulthood, I would see some of these same people who were developing their careers and developing their art all the way through their lives. So that was extremely important to me. And also, it was a way for me to measure my ability to see who was good and where I needed help. And also, we shared our training, things that we had learned in school, we would share with one another. So that goes on even today after I'm over 70 years old, I'm 76 years old, and that still happens where I talk to other artists about what they're doing and I talk about what I'm doing. And we go through the process of how it was created, and we learn from each other, even now.
I'm just thinking about the process that your father placed you into when he obviously saw the talents and skills that were there and what he needed to do to develop that in his son. Now, I don't know if that was a freebie, but what happens when you see that kind of talent in kids and it needs to be developed? And you may not have money to send them to a program or what have you. What can parents or guardians do when they see that kind of talent in a kid to nurture it and to motivate it?
One way to motivate it is to give them materials to work with. Something as simple as piece of paper and a pencil as a start. If you want to get into color, there's crayon and there's also watercolor, which is very inexpensive. You can always do that. And I have a granddaughter. She's 5 years old now, very talented. And I saw that when I was giving her markers and a paper to work on. And as most kids, when they start working on paper, they scribble back and forth, back and forth. And what I tell her to do is make circles. Don't go back and forth, create circles. And then she started developing her drawing skills by able to make circles and intersecting circles. And before you know it, she was making faces. And then she was making features and faces. She's 5 years old now. And she's extremely talented.
I think about a story that Smokey Robinson tells, where when he was a kid, he would wake up on Saturday mornings. He got sisters, and they were trying to sleep, and he would be beating on everything in the house, just going boo, 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 boo. And
Right.
his sisters would be screaming and hollering, "Mama, make him stop!" He says, "No, let him alone. He's." And I think about that now because most people don't know that he was a drummer.
Right.
He just never. That was not the thing that Berry Gordy was looking for in a group. But he certainly, that's how he started. Like, his mom, like, "Hold up, let him beat on the drums. You know, he's gonna be something one day." And so I think for all of us, there are those things that we see in children, whether we are a teacher, a youth program provider, a parent, and oftentimes we don't know what to do with that talent. And I see so many young people that just teeming with talent that's just untapped or, not nurtured. And I just don't think we have enough people looking at our young people, but particularly programming out there. Now, just a few weeks ago, I had the sister who heads up St. Louis Artworks on there. Now, that's an art program specific to young people, but it's not a
Right.
whole lot of other art, specific programs out there. So, and if you start asking where do young people go and where do you send them, there's not a whole lot there. But I'm like you, start with the freebie stuff first that's already in the house,
Right,
paper and pen,
exactly.
and just go to it. But there's always somebody that we know that's an artist that says, "Look, can you see what Johnny's doing and give him some help?" And most
That
people would be
happens to
happy
me
to
all
do
the
that.
time. That happens to me all the time. I have people come up to me and talking about my son can draw. Look at him. What do you think of him? That type of thing. That comes all the time. And I ask them when they say that to me, is are you providing the space for him to be creative? Are you providing materials for him that he could use to be creative? Are you introducing him to other artists who are doing things that he's doing where he can develop? Are you directing him in a way? You don't have to maybe not have those skills yourself, but you know people who do. And all you need is just a little direction. Actually, it can come from five or six different people. It doesn't have to be just one person giving you information. And it also helps to be working with your peers. Not necessarily people that are older than you. Of course, that helps, but it's even more helpful if the person that you're learning from is your own age and your peer group and working with them.
I'm always so interested in art because I think without visual art, this would just be a dull society. And when you think about societies from an I can't even say it right, anthropological standpoint, and I've been interacting more and more with instructors who teach anthropology. And one of the things that's clear to me is that 100, 200, 300, 400 years from now, people use those visuals to help them understand the
There.
society at that particular time. And so
Exactly.
it's really important for artists and people in general to be more intentional about what that artistry looks like, if it's going to really reflect the people of that time, the political climate of that time. And how important that is for people down the road to know what was done, so either that they build on it or they say we're not going to do that. That was catastrophic. We can't go there. But I'm just looking at how important art is in a
Well,
society.
one of the things about art, visual arts changed completely. If you talk about how it was 1,000 years ago and how important art was because there were no cameras or anything like that, and most people were illiterate, and you communicated through visual art. Churches knew that. That's why they ha hired artists to do a spiritual imagery.
On the ceilings, the walls, the whole nine.
Right,
Yeah.
and to the point where when they built the first Gothic cathedral in 1150, the person who built it said that the dull mind rises to truth through material things, meaning that through material things, they assume that that's the truth of reality. So, and again, art is teaching the masses, and have always, even to this day. As you see art develop, you have to know if you're a visual artist and if you're serious about being an artist, you need to know the history of art and where it came from and study the biographies of past artists and how they got to develop who they were. Everyone's story is completely different. You can look at 500 different artists and everyone has a different story on how they became. I'm talking about successful artists, people that we
Right,
read
right,
about in history.
right.
The Michelangelos, the Rembrandts, and all of these guys, they all had different paths to their success. And
Well,
one of the,
you all go ahead.
no, I'm just saying one of the ways of doing that is studying your history and be a student of history, a student of your craft. If it's visual art, study visual art, architecture, all of those things, writing, etc., everything that goes with it. If you're a musician, of course, you study music. You have studied written music as well as the different instruments that produce music and being able to identify those instruments just by listening to them. You don't have to see the man. You can listen to them and point out and just give yourself that exercise as you're listening to a song and try to identify the instruments that you hear. That's constant training.
Yeah. And you have described yourself as a research artist. Is that what you mean by that when you say looking at the history of the various crafts and that kind of thing, or is that something different?
Well, it's a little different because if you're doing research, what you're doing is you're trying to develop your own skills. As a producing artist, if you're going to draw something, you have to understand anatomy if you're going to draw people. You have to understand architecture if you're going to draw buildings and where they came from, what those lines mean. All of that comes together. And it takes a long time to develop it. I tell myself when people ask me, how long does it take me to do a painting? They see a painting, they say, oh, this is beautiful. How long did it take you to do it? And I always say, it took me 35 years to do this painting, because that's how long it took for me to learn the skills that I have to develop in order to get to where I am today. It's not instant, it's not some innate thing that all of a sudden you're blessed with these skills and you automatically have it. So that's not how it works. It means that you worked at it, you trained yourself, and you're constantly trying to develop and become better and better at it. Even when I was a monk artist, I was never the best, but that was good because what it meant was I had something to strive for.
Right. You know, those saying steel sharpens steel. So yeah, you
Yes,
can't be around
exactly.
mediocre people and think you're gonna do better.
No, you cannot. You have to be around people who are better than you in order for you to learn how to become better, how to work at it.
Let's talk about, one of what I see is one of your really phenomenal pieces of work, and that is the mural at the St. Louis, the St. Louis
Right.
Airport. And one of the things I often ask people is, have you seen the mural? And a lot of people haven't, even people that frequent that airport. And
Right.
so first of all, let's talk about the why you all did it, because this is such a St. Louis story in that
Right.
you had something where black folks were omitted, then you had to come back and say, whoa, wait a minute. There are black
Right.
aviators that we should be. So let's start with that because that is the missing history. If you start looking up the aviator mural, you don't hear about that story, except if you go to my column in the St. Louis American,
Yeah.
because I'm going to tell it like it is. But how did you and Spencer Taylor decided we got to do this?
Well, actually, the opportunity came when the St. Louis Airport opened their terminal in 1983. And in 1983, they hired a white artist named Siegfried Reinhardt to do an aviation mural that was 147 feet long to tell the history of aviation. He completed that mural on time for the opening of the 83 terminal opening, and they unveiled the mural. On that airport commission was a man by the name of Arthur Chink Washington, who looked at that mural and immediately could not find himself in that mural. Complained about it, and the mayor at the time, Vincent Shamel, decided to form an oversight committee with a lot of citizens on them. I mean, I can name them if you want me to, but they were some white citizens and black citizens, and I guess the primary black person at that time was Luther Boykins, who was also a protege of Vince Shamel. They worked together in trying to get votes for in order for Shamel to become mayor. So it was just natural for Shamel to put Luther Boykins on that committee. And Luther Boykins, being a native of St. Louis and knowing the black community, he knew some of the educators of that time, who was Chester Hodges, Walter Lathan, Vester Pruitt, who was a sister-in-law of Wendell Pruitt, and put those people on that committee. So they're trying to figure out, okay, what are we going to do about this oversight? They called it an oversight. And they said, we should have a mirror, we should have a painting and put it right next to his, and include four or five black aviators and just have a painting of that. And then as I got heard about it, I heard about it through Jace Spain and Robert Powell were talking about what the scuttlebutt was in the neighborhood, and got a chance to get into the meetings and said that this is bigger than just five images next to a mural. There's an entire story of African American aviators. As a matter of fact, we were able to identify 22 pilots who flew in World War II who were from St. Louis, who were on that mural, as well as some of the ones who came before World War II, and also the ones who came after World War II. So that's what that mural tells. It's a pictorial history of African American involvement from aviation from 1917 to the space age. So that's what's there.
So when I and at one point both murals were there.
Yes.
The white mural took up a whole bunch of space. You didn't miss that. But you know, it's just
147
curious.
feet.
Yeah, 147 feet. But Solomon, I can't. I mean, in 1983, I still can't wrap my head around how an artist would be commissioned to create an aviator mural and not think about people that didn't look like him.
Well, he's a student in WashU. He didn't see black people as equals in his eyes. Obviously, it didn't mean to him. As far as aviation history, he talked about Greek mythology in his mural and brought up to the space age. So he was more interested in the European aspect of aviation and not aviation as a complete story. That's not unlike what's going on today. They don't see black people in a complete story about African American involvement in US history. I mean, this is US history. This is not African American history. This is not separate from what the United States had developed into from its beginning. We're part of it. We were
So
there
yeah, I mean,
at square one, at ground zero.
but was Only one person on that committee looked at that thing and said, "Whoa, whoa, whoa, wait a minute. Where's the black folks?
There was
Where's the
only one
women?"
person. There's only one person on that committee who had the power to do it, and that was Chink Washington. You know, he was on the committee, so he's able to attend the meetings and be in the room and be able to voice objection.
And
And
Chink's no longer with us, but I believe he was a committee person at one time, so he
yes,
did have
exactly.
a little bit of
Exactly.
political clout. But I'm just looking at a whole committee that kept looking at that and seeing nothing wrong with that. Not a
Well,
brown face or a woman on there.
they weren't part of the planning committee. They allowed Siegfried Reinhardt to have complete artistic control. And they flattered him. Leonard Griggs, who was the airport director at the time,
Yeah, I remember him.
was flattered when Reinhardt told him that his portrait was going to be on that mural. So that's all he needed to hear. Go ahead, go with it, you know.
So here's what happens. People see this all white mural and they say, okay, we're going to do something different. And people push back on the little photo that was then supposed to be the expansion of other black folks in there. Talk about what happened when you all were commissioned, because it was some time that it took to raise money and get all of this together. So walk us through that process.
Well, this is 1985, some 2 years after the unveiling of the Reinhardt mural, when the committee came together and decided to form, incorporate as a not-for-profit so that they could raise money. And they incorporated it as CAMPS. That's an acronym that means the Committee for the Aviation Mural Project Success. And once they formed that was formed by Freda Wheaton. She was able to incorporate the organization and get it started. They still didn't have anybody as willing to give the money. They had white people that were on the oversight committee, and they said they're not going to raise enough money to pay black people. So they backed out as they started on the committee. And as the committee started incorporating, showing that they were doing something serious by incorporating, then all of a sudden, people like Kim Tucci, Gabe Abarici, Marge Amigetti, these people decided to back away and
And
not.
Solomon, that's why I say that this is such a St. Louis story, because the racism always follows through. Now, those three people you named alone could have funded,
They
you know,
could have.
camps. They could have easily funded camps for the kind of money that they're making. But for them to back out of a project like this that was going to n not only in some ways rectify the huge omission that had been made in the first one, but then I mean, to me, it just makes me mad just even thinking about it, that we
It's
had
almost to
to
be
fight.
expected. It's almost to be expected. It's almost to be expected that, okay, we're not going to get help from them. So the largest impetus that really got that mural started was Wayman Smith from Anheuser-Busch. He was able to pledge $100,000 over a 3 year period as seed money to get this project started. And because of him, they were able to get the nickels and dimes, the 5,000 here, the 1,000 there, that kind of thing, and build it up to it. Spencer and I, we put together a legal contract as to what we would do, how we wanted to be paid. We asked them to give us, I think it was somewhere around $50,000 less than what Reinhardt made on his mural. So we asked for $290,000 to do that mural. Reinhardt got somewhere around $340,000 to do his mural. He had no trouble getting his money.
I'm
But
sure.
anyway, once CAMPS was able to secure funding from AB, Anheuser-Busch, the $33,000 we accepted as a down payment to get the mural project started. we took that $33,000 and one third of it immediately went towards supplies. The canvas itself cost $11,000, so we bought an 88-foot by 80-foot long roll of canvas and just cut off that roll of canvas to do each one of those panels. There's five panels in total. And then the supplies that go with it. So we really wasn't being paid, financially to do it. We got some money for it, but not enough as a salary. We still worked at McDonnell Douglas together. We had to go to our jobs every day, in order to pay the bills at home. But it was a love project. And what Spencer said to me, which really was the most important thing, was that all these arguments that were going on about we can't make money and we're having trouble funding it and all of those types of things. He said, in the final analysis, it's the artist who's going to be responsible for doing this mural. We're the ones who are going to determine whether or not this is a success or not. So we have to be
Well,
committed to it, regardless of the
exactly.
funds.
Right. Yeah. And I'm thinking though, in terms of the process and who ended up on there, what was the decision making about how to narrow it down? I mean, true enough, there were aviators, like you said, there was what, 22 pilots right here in St. Louis.
Right.
And I'm pretty keen on aviation, because my stepfather was one of the Tuskegee airmen. So I'm always like, where are the black folks who've been in the air, and the Colemans and the yeah. And so how did you all like narrow that down? Who would be on there? Obviously, you made sure women were in there, but
Right.
what was that like?
Here was the process. As a historian, I knew something about the Tuskegee Airmen growing up as a little kid. I worked in a shoeshine parlor that was run by the brother of a Tuskegee Airman who's on that mural. My father was a shoeshine boy and a paper boy in the 30s and 40s. And when the Tuskegee experiment was going on in 1942, he collected the newspaper articles that I used to use in the 50s in elementary school as show and tell when I go to school every day. So I knew that story. So by the time I became an adult, I was already aware of the story of the Tuskegee Airmen. One of the things that helped us more than anything was the Smithsonian was having an exhibit called Black Americans in Flight, that what they were showing black aviators who were the beginning pilots doing pre-World War I and after, who black flyers were doing. So that book was really important for us to establish who were the pioneers before the Tuskegee experiment. So that book was a great help. Then there were other stories that came along. One of the things that the committee was adamant about was making sure that all the 22 pilots from St. Louis were on that mural. And also, we had to represent the grounds crewmen. So that kind of took away some of the politics. The other thing that we were trying to avoid as far as politics was concerned is to identify people who had created milestones, and those milestones were the ones that's part of that mural. People who were able to fly and do demonstrations. Black flyers who had their own planes back in the 30s, who did those air shows that were going on. These the first, the
Yeah, and you
pioneers.
captured the two astronauts as well.
Yeah, well,
That's
that's later. That's much
okay.
later. So in the beginning, we were trying to establish who were the pioneers.
Okay.
Then, Willa Brown, who had a flying school in Chicago, she had to be on there. These types of people who were the pioneers before the Tuskegee experiment. Then, of course, the Tuskegee experiment, how they got formed. That's why Truman is there. That's why Eleanor Roosevelt is on there, because she was the one who helped push, not Congress, but her husband, to sign off on having seed money to start what they call Morton Field, which is right outside Tuskegee. It's like 5 miles from the campus of Tuskegee. They call them Tuskegee Airmen because Tuskegee campus was 5 miles away from the field, Morton Field. And of course, they train in the school area, but they flew in Morton Field, which is 5 miles from the campus. But it was things like that that we were focused on in trying to identify that. We created an outline and then do a historical timeline. And that's how the mural is based on a historical timeline from pre-Tuskegee, the Tuskegee experiment, the people who in Tuskegee, who flew in Tuskegee, the first pilots, the first one to shoot down a jet, the first person to die in combat, first these milestones, the first pilot to shoot three Germans in a single day was Clarence Lester. All of these guys had to be in there as far as the pioneer or the honor roll of Tuskegee Airmen. You couldn't put them all in there because there were 450 pilots who flew into Tuskegee, and there were 10,000 Tuskegee Airmen, which was part of the grounds crew and that type of thing. It took 10 grounds crewmen in order to support one pilot in the air. So when that plane came down, then the mechanics worked on it, and it was 10 of them working on that plane to have it flight ready so that the pilot can get in there and do what he had to do.
You know, if I let me just say, just to see it is pretty powerful. We would take our youth group there for a field trip, and their assignment was before they got there to, because we had the outline that you talked about, and they had the names. They had to do the research on
Yes.
that the person that they picked, and then when they got to the airport, then they would look for that person. And you
Okay.
talk about them being so excited. And so the field trip included a ride on the Metrolink to the airport. Well, I
Right.
remember one particular thing, and this must have been like after 9/11 or something. And you know, they had things all walled off. And where that mural is in a very precarious place, because when our young people started spreading out to look at it, we had some security people rush over there, which really rubbed me the wrong way. First of all, don't touch my kids. You know,
Right.
the way y'all got this thing in here, folks are going to go outside this line. So
Right.
we had a little bit of attention there. But the next time I went out there, I noticed they had moved the
They
rail
worked it
a little
out.
bit. They worked it
Right.
out. Don't
Right.
play, because if you want people
Right.
to really look at this, you need to
You
make it
have to allow
accessible
them to
to them.
look at it. Right.
Exactly. But because of where it is, you could miss it once you're coming through the airport. And so I really want people to start looking for it if they haven't ever seen it, and just spend some time over there, because you can. They have it where you could just stand over there and read the stuff. But people, when they go there now, Solomon, they don't know that the white airmen are missing. There's no longer a mural over there where the white ones were. So tell us where
Because
that one went.
they went to St. Louis University. That mural, when it was done, it was owned by a not-for-profit organization that owned that mural. The airport did not own that mural when they housed it. And they had a lease of 20 years to lease that mural, with the hope was that this not-for-profit would be able to sell it to the airport. But the airport wasn't that keen on that mural, because of the omissions and all the flaws that, and even though our mural is only 51 feet long and that Reinhardt mural was 147 foot long, there's no comparison in the artistry that was going on between each one of those murals. So by the time that lease ran out after 20 years, so you look at 20 years after 1983, which would be 2003, and they held on to it for a year or two before they decided to give it to another not-for-profit organization, which happens to be St. Louis University, and they were the ones to have it. So under the contract agreement was that they could relinquish that mural to another not-for-profit and not try to purchase it. And the not-for-profit organization that started the Reinhardt Mirror went defunct. So it was really owned by the IRS, I guess. It would be the people who would take ownership of it. Or the only way they can give it transfer ownership was to transfer it by the same means in which they gave it away, which is to another not-for-profit.
Because I'm thinking though, when you would have the two, what I would say, two competing murals, because one was on
Right.
one side and the other was on the other, that
Right.
people would say, well, why are there two? And then why are there all white people here and all? But so I could understand why the airport would say, we don't need this kind of
Well,
controversy.
also, the other thing was that the camps committee did a wise thing. As soon as they claimed it or owned it, they gave it to the airport. So the airport owns that mural. So you don't have to worry about it going anywhere
And that was
because
going to be
it's.
my next question. Who does it belong to? And do we have to worry about it being
No.
given away to somebody? Okay.
No.
So
Trans
that it
ownership
could
was
stay there for
transferred.
imper yeah. Good, 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 good.
Ownership was
Wow.
transferred to them. What they ended up doing after that mural was they started art and travel committee for not-for-profit collection of arts that they could develop in the airport so they can expand their art collection within the airport. So they
And I saw
started a whole
that
new program.
and I could see that there, but I also seen similar projects in other airports where artistry, local artists are actually featured in the airport. So
Right.
I mean it makes sense. You're going to be walking lots of people walking through there with sometimes nothing to do.
But
So to look at the artistry. But tell me a little, is there any has there been any efforts or need for any touch-ups on the mural? I know it's behind glass and it's fairly protected from
right.
elements, but has there been a need or will there be a need in the future to, go in and highlight some of the colors or whatever?
No, it shouldn't be, but as all things, they age. It might be a time when there may be a need for cleaning it, but it's way down the road. I mean, it's going to. It was done in oil paints, and that was our thinking because all the Renaissance paintings are done in oils, and they 500 years old. They're still around.
Or older, or
Or
older.
older, right, exactly.
So this marked the 35th anniversary. And one of the things I noted that there doesn't seem to be any hoopla around these anniversaries, like every 5 years, the 20th, the 25th, the 30th, the 35th. Is it because there's no committee now, like camps that's associated with that, and it would have to come from either the airport commissioners or some other entity to make a big deal about, okay, it's still here. It actually belongs to the people because the airport belongs to the people. So here's some artwork that's representative of not only an issue that reflected the racism in artistry in aviation, but here is a projection of aviators that people may not have even known existed.
You
It's
have to
such a
wait for
treasure. It's such a treasure.
it's a timing thing. After the 30th anniversary, which would have been 2020, that was a COVID year. And that was the excuse of not celebrating the 30th anniversary. But they did celebrate the 25th anniversary. And they were able to give congressional medals to the Tuskegee Airmen who were still living in front of the mural. And they had a big deal program. Tuskegee Airmen was signing the brochures or the pamphlets that they were giving away to students. I don't know if they're still producing those murals, but now, I'm in communication with the director of communications, the PR director. And they're afraid of the current administration.
Federal
And
or local?
The airport depends on a lot of money from the federal government in order to
Right.
develop the airport, in order to get permission, FCC, in order to get permissions to do all types of projects that the airport is involved in. And they don't want to do anything to create
Attention or resistance. No, I
I
understand
think
that.
that resistance part is really probably the most accurate into what they're doing. They don't want to interfere because of the current attitude of the current administration. They're so willing to take money from researching in cancer and all of that because of them using immigrants and all kinds of nonsense. The
Yeah, I
thing
mean the
is,
whole
Jamila,
DEI thing. I think that mural would probably come
exactly.
under some kind of DEI thing, and next thing
It
you know,
would,
it's gone. Yeah.
or it could be implicated. All you need is just one person to complain, and then it gets
Right.
the attention of everybody.
Well, one right person to complain, because that's why I think this, having you on the show was so important, because I know that people, first of all, don't know it's there, don't know the history of it. And if you don't know it's there or you don't know the history of it, then you're less likely to fight for it, because the time
Right.
may come where we have to fight for that. And we need to know why we're fighting for it.
I'm hoping that the 40th anniversary will be a clear path for a celebration. And even though the 35th was not, maybe the 40th may be able to have the opportunity for the city to celebrate and learn something about it, because there is a lot of information about that mural that I have in my head that I shared in my book. I did a book called Junie, My Art Story. And I talk about the mural and how it's developed and also the details of each element that's in that mural panel by panel. And I've also done, lectures in front of the mural, only one or two, but that was enough. There was a man that contacted me from Nashville, who was bringing 50 students up from Nashville, wanted to see that mural. And I met him at the airport at the mural and gave an hour-long presentation. My son photographed it. It was really a nice story because one of the students that were part of that group was the granddaughter of Daniel Chappie James, who is the fighter pilot that's in the contemporary section of that mural. And I just thought that was wonderful. She even looked like him. When we took a picture of her, she was about maybe 14, 15 years old, and she looked just like him.
But
You
that's
could
the
tell they
important
related.
Solomon of having something like that, because you can show it off for generations to come, whether
Right.
you are related to somebody or not. It's such an
Right.
informational historical piece that you almost, it's almost like each person just has a rippling kind of history to them that you could just go on and on and on. And I would hope that if people hadn't known about it before today, that they go out there, just take you a nice little ride on the Metrolink and get out there. That's the quickest way to do that, so you don't
It
have to
is.
park
It
out
is.
there. Yeah, it's very simple, and just go check it out. Just spend some time and check it out.
You can get on the Metrolink and then get back on and go back to where you came from.
Exactly. And that's
No
why our kids
problem.
love that field trip. When it was coming up, they knew they'd get to ride on the Metrolink. And then when they got there, and then of course we always had a little snack for them. But that mural has 75 portraits. So that's 75 people that
Right.
we should know about. And there's 18 aircraft that we should know about. There are one spacecraft that we should know
Right.
about. Our people have been such an integral part of aviation in this country. I don't see how one person could have left us out of that, but they did. So
You know the
I do want
magic
to
of that.
thank you and Spence
I
for
just want to
like
say one thing before we go. The magic of that mural is the fact that there are 75 portraits and all of them are different colors. 40, 57 shades of black. All different all different
That's true.
shades and
That's
complexions.
true.
Are
That's
all
very
part of that
true.
mural. They're
And
not
I just yeah, and I just think about what it meant for you all to paint that. And how long it took,
Yes.
because it took some years, right?
It took 30 months. two and a half years. It took a total of 5 years, the research part and then the actual painting itself. So it took a total of about 5 years, but 30 months of actual painting in 2.5 years. And it was a labor of love because we were able to, he and I, when Spencer and I were working together and we started talking about complexions and trying to get people right. And we worked from black and white photos. We didn't work from
Oh,
color
wow.
photos.
Oh,
We
wow.
worked from black and white photos. And then we would interview the families and say, well, what does your daddy look like? Did he look like Sidney Poitier or did he look like, Harry Belafonte? Ask questions like that, and try to get the right complexions. And that was important.
Well, there's no need for us not to go out there as individual citizens or to organize groups to go out there in prep for the Big 40. So let's say in the Big 40, we're going to be out there and we're going to have all kind of stuff happening. But yeah, I just think of what you and Spence, the kind of visionary artists that you all are to even do that. Because again, this was in between your real paying job, but and it probably would have taken shorter if you all were doing it just full time. But
So
yeah, that's the way black artists have to do
we
sometimes.
primarily work weekends. We would start on a Friday and work, maybe 4 or 5 hours, and then we'd do a 12-hour Saturday and a 12-hour Sunday and that kind of thing. And but it was a labor of love, the entire time we were doing it. We wanted to make sure that we did everything correctly and there would be no controversy once it was unveiled for somebody to come back and say we made a mistake about something. So we had to make sure that the insignia was right. Everything was thanks to Bill Clay, the Congressman Clay. He was able to give us a poster of all the military medals on a single poster so we could see what the colors were of each one of those medals. So we did get help.
It's amazing. It's amazing. And it's well worth the trip. So I'm just encouraging people to go there. We have so many jewels in our community, Solomon, that our people don't know about. And sometimes they're not even on listed on, say, what's going on in St. Louis, when you talk about tourism. And so we have to do that for ourselves. We have to
We
be
do.
our own promoters, our own respecters, our own all of that. We have to be the ones who are doing that work. And so I just want to personally and publicly thank you and Spence Taylor for doing that and for doing it for posterity, because it's going to be there for a while.
It's going to be there
In
for
our
a
last,
while.
yeah, in our last few minutes, can you talk about what's going on with the 10th Street Gallery? Because that's another one of your
Yeah,
projects.
my wife Pat and I, we opened 10th Street Gallery in 2010 and 20, somewhere after COVID shut us down because we couldn't have artist receptions and things like that. And the rent kept coming, and all the things. So it was an expense that, we just couldn't carry without having the gallery pay for itself. So we had to shut it down, but it was a great opportunity to network with the community about art
It
and
was,
artists and bring artists in from out of town and have exhibits. So it was a great time for that.
Any plans to reopen it somewhere else or the
Well,
concept somewhere else?
we're hoping to find a location somewhere where we could at least, if not short term, maybe couple of years or whatever to see how it goes, but at least try to kick it up again and see if there's still interest in the community about having the gallery. So we'll work on that. I just want to mention that I did write my art story, published it last year, and copies of it is at the Missouri History Museum. So if people are interested,
Is that the only place? Is it at any of the
it's
local
called
bookstores?
the local bookstores, since I'm self-published, I don't want to finance their operation. The Missouri History Museum was fair in purchasing a group some books that were able to put in the bookstore. But if I'm going to self-publish And then a bookstore like Left Bank, who wants to get 60-40 and have me pay for the books, provide the books for them, and then they get 60% of a book that I paid for. Don't make financial sense.
Okay.
Yeah.
So the name of the book again, Solomon?
Junie, it's Junie. That's my name. I'm a junior. Solomon Leroy Thurman Jr. And my family
Okay.
called me Junie when I was growing up
Ah,
to
okay. I
keep
was
from
wondering where
calling
that
me
came
Junie.
from when I saw that on the book title. Okay,
Yeah,
Junie.
they
Okay.
keep from calling me Junie, Junior. They didn't want to
Okay.
call me Junior. So they called me
Okay.
Junie. And the odd thing about that was that when I went to elementary school and kindergarten, I was known as Leroy for 12 years of my education. It wasn't until I was in the 10th grade that the St. Louis public school system computerized the student roster. And that's how I was able to use my government name for the first time.
Wow. Okay, that's probably a whole nother story to tell. Wow. So if you want to check out that book, you have to go to the History Museum to do that. But you can go for free. Go to see the mural. This
Mural,
is
right.
Africa. This is Black Americans in flight. I always like to
24
say
hours
Black
a
aviators.
day.
Yeah.
24 hours. You can go see that mural at 2 in the morning if you want to.
So yeah, and again, just appreciate the artists in amongst us, native St. Louisans who are making their contribution where they are for us and our generations to come. Next week, we are going to have our guests, the people who are responsible for the reclamation of sh the Osage Nation's mounds. So, that was history. We didn't have a lot of hoopla about that, but we're going to talk to those people from the Osage Nation who got some of their land back. This is a
Oh my
country that has
goodness.
been very hypocritical in stealing people's lands and stealing people's property and stealing people's thoughts, stealing people's inventions, but they got a little piece of that back. So look forward to that. And then we'll round out the month with people, not politicians. That's the big campaign that's going on, that's collecting signatures that is going to hopefully reverse the redistricting, the illegal redistricting that happened in Missouri. So we're going to have people talking about that as we make that last push. So we thank you all for joining us. We thank Solomon Thurman for sharing his story about the Black aviators and bringing that to life for us. Yeah, it's a lot going on, y'all, but a lot of it's positive. So we should not
It is.
be
It is.
dismal and acting like, there's nothing to be done and all doom and
We're not
gloom.
helpless. We're not helpless.
No, we are
We
not.
have power.
And
We have power. We have power.
absolutely. We have absolutely do. So we want to close out, and we want to tell you to get involved, stay woke. Don't let people tell you that that's a bad word. We need to stay woke, particularly with the president that we have in office now. This is Jamala Rogers, your host, and I will see you on the battlefield.
Thank you.